Now, Marissa Santino, co-director of the New York chapter of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and Shamir Settle, policy analyst at the Cisco Policy Institute, say domestic workers care for us and our families. And now it's time to make care work fair work. I want to begin by really creating a picture of the kind of work. Who are the primarily women that do the domestic work, and what is domestic work? Why don't we start with our sister from the Domestic Workers Organization?
My name is Marissa Santino, and I am the National Domestic Workers Alliance co-director. Our alliance organizes the over 2.5 million domestic workers across the country. Domestic workers are those people that work in someone's home. They do the care work that is so essential to a part of our everyday lives. And that includes nannies, caregivers, and house cleaners. Predominantly, care work is done by women, and in this country, it's done by women of color and the majority of immigrants. And there are both historical contexts and then current structural systems that make it so. And this is kind of fully understand, like, domestic workers work behind closed doors, within people's homes, in an intimate setting, and the power differential between an employer and a domestic worker is very great. Then when we think about who domestic workers are as Black, as brown women, as immigrant women, as women, majority of, how those systems then also create a sector of workers that are both invisible in our society and then also highly vulnerable to exploitation, all the while doing some of the most important work that we can encounter within our lives. They're doing the work that makes all other work possible, and they're such an intimate part of our life. Domestic work and care work are a growing industry. It cannot be mechanized. As we saw, pandemic, that is so critical to both just like the function of our society and then just the well-being of our society as well.
Give us an idea of what the day-to-day work might be. Sure. For the people who labor to,
yes,
service very often some of our most vulnerable people in the population, the disabled, the ill, the elderly, and so on.
One of the most kind of misunderstood sectors is caring for children in within people's homes in a professional context. It lacks a sort of professional label that then kind of garners the sort of respect, dignity, and then fair workplace practices that should happen in every kind of workplace in general. But like for a nanny, when they're hired, an employer needs somebody that's going to provide the care for a very young child or a baby. And really what this is you are raising a child, because the work itself is so like all-inclusive. It's long days because the employers go to work themselves. They might work 9 to 5. They might work longer hours. So the nanny needs to show up before the employer leaves the home, which can be 7 o'clock in the morning, sometimes earlier, and then has to stay throughout the day and cannot leave until the employer comes home. 55-hour work week is so common, but so unacknowledged because so few employers understand that domestic workers are employees. They don't understand themselves as employers who then have to adhere to fair labor practices and have standards like overtime. Oftentimes aren't even legally allowable, but because there is like a lack of knowledge and a lack of acknowledgement of the profession, it continues to kind of perpetuate in this way. And then for the nanny, taking care of children, it is constant work. There aren't necessarily breaks throughout the day, right? You can't just sort of take your lunch break and leave a child on their own. Even when the child may be napping, there is usually extra work to be done, like house cleaning or general tidying. So also the idea that nannies need to be like constantly working feeds into sort of like racial biases, right? That they shouldn't be sitting down, that they shouldn't be resting. But taking care of children is really hard work. And so for a nanny, she could be working a 10-hour day, doesn't have any breaks, and is highly scrutinized in their workplace, especially when going to like a playground or taking the child out. Or sometimes they just don't even have a chance to be within the home, especially during the pandemic. And these are some really kind of pervasive like workplace practices that you don't get to see because they're working behind closed doors. And when we think about home care workers, their shifts might be varying, and they tend to live very far away from where they work. So if you have an overnight shift, you have to travel quite far, but you may not have enough hours within one agency or within one employer to constitute like a full-time job. And so they are juggling between several homes or several clients that they provide care for at the same time as having to adhere to, again, some very like rigid standards around care work. And it's not easy work. Mm-hmm. It's lifting. It's being a companion to somebody who may be homebound. It's working for people that may not treat you right. And it's doing that work with extreme care and responsibility. So this is just sort of an image of like what it's like to go to work and constantly being on your feet, mm-hmm. having a lot of responsibilities, and then having to really bend to what is needed by the employers because there is such little like negotiation or give within the workspace.
Well, let's bring Shamir into the discussion now, who works with the Fiscal Policy Institute, one of the foremost important organizations that looks at the issues of the working class. Shamir, I really think that your report was of such great importance. Your thoughts and your concerns about what spurred the report on, and how do you quantify and look at it as a fiscal policy analyst, the things that have been said to so far relevant to domestic workers?
So we, of course, have been at the Fiscal Policy Institute, have been curious about the number of domestic workers in New York, because we know that although these jobs are essential to our economy, they're largely hidden from public view and left out of the discourse. How domestic work makes all other work possible, that is a critical component to our economy and making sure that workers are able to go to work. That has a lot to do with whether or not, you know, their children are being looked after or whether or not their elderly parents are being cared for. So when it comes to who domestic workers are, they include house cleaners, nannies, and home care aides who care for people with disabilities or who are elderly. We really wanted to dig into these numbers because we know that they're such a large part of our economy and what the Biden administration is calling the care infrastructure. And what we found was that there are 328,000 domestic workers in New York State. The majority of these women work in New York City, which is about 71%, and followed by Northern/Western New York, which is about a share of 12%. We know these are mostly women and people of color. 92% of domestic workers in New York State are women. 63% of domestic workers are immigrants. 34% are Hispanic. 28% are Black. And 13% of domestic workers are Asian and Asian American and Pacific Islanders. So that's a really high level, but
domestic workers are largely not unionized. They are not covered by the National Labor Relations Act. But I want to just go back and place it in a historic context, because certainly this work evolves from some of the structural and some of the repressive attitudinal components and treatment of women. It's part of a really, in some ways, an enduring legacy of slavery, of Jim Crow domestic work. The racial dimensions, the dimensions of misogyny, et cetera, that still go to the way we treat women in the workforce, is part of the battle of really dignifying this work and giving the wage and benefit conditions and grievance procedures that people who are employed as domestic workers should have. Shamir?
I'm glad you brought this up, but this country has a history of, you know, enslaving Black women and forcing them to do this sort of domestic work, and then to offer very low wages for the work during Jim Crow. It has created an enduring legacy that's still visible in the data that we see today. So this is exactly what you mentioned. It's structural racism, cultural norms that work to reinforce and perpetuate this racial inequity. If we were looking at the data and saw an equal distribution, right? In other words, like racial equity would be a reality in which, like, you look at the data and no person is more or less likely to experience certain benefits or burdens just because of the color of their skin. But that's not what we see. We see that Black and Latinx and immigrant women are more likely to do this work, and it's direct correlation from our history.
And Marissa, I'm interested in your thoughts also on this.
During the New Deal and then during the kind of the creation of our, what we currently understand as like our labor laws in this country were created, sectors of workers were excluded specifically because of their race. Those were domestic workers, farm workers, and anyone in the service industry. And that's because this is the work that was allowed for Black men and women to do in this country. And since then, in all of these sectors, and then specifically for domestic workers, we've been fighting those exclusions, trying to re-include and then also bolster the labor rights and safety networks that are required to really do this sector work justice. And that means, for example, in New York, it's the first state in the entire country 11 years ago to pass a domestic worker bill of rights that addresses some of these historical exclusions. Since then, understanding who workers are is so key, and also understanding what type of advocacy needs to happen, not only for labor standards, but also for like the social safety net, that there needs to be more infrastructure and resources for women of color, for mothers, for caregivers, not just professionally paid, but just caregivers in general, because so many domestic workers are caregivers of within their own families as well. And so when we're thinking about who are and what is the historical context, we also use this greatly and address it in our organizing. What is not only like current ongoing trauma for workers that exploited and or abused in the workplace, but the intergenerational trauma, right? Anecdotally, we know that domestic work is like passed down from grandmother to mother to daughter. That means that given that there is a set of intergenerational trauma and abuse and exploitation that happens, that can be stopped by understanding where our policies come from, understanding who our workers are within our society, but also literally. Those kind of harmful practices and harmful policies can be stopped, and then we can also invest in what is implementation and enforcement of worker rights through this lens, centering our historical context and centering really the power of domestic workers themselves and the power of the movement that they have built out in this country.
Shamir, let's translate some of this for entered into. We're talking about, which I gather from your report, at least 328,000 domestic workers in New York State. Talk about what you've unearthed and what we need to understand about the economic conditions, the healthcare conditions these women primarily are getting paid. And then, of course, we will move to and understand what are some of the really important recommendations as to what we do to provide access to fair pay and labor protections and so on. Shamir?
We found that of the 328,000 domestic workers in New York, the majority work as home health care aides. That's 84% of domestic workers. The remaining domestic workers are made up of nannies, so 8%, and house cleaners, which is also 8% of all domestic workers. Then we wanted to go a little bit further to say how much domestic workers were earning. We saw that they earn just 56% of what other workers earn. Domestic workers in New York have a median hourly earning of $12.20 compared to all other workers who have median hourly earnings of $21.45.
And they, of course, have no health care provisions and so on, which would take me to the point, and let's also look at the particular kinds of accentuated difficulties and problematic that have come to light as a result of your study and the experiential level of domestic workers during the pandemic period. Shamir?
Some domestic workers are represented by unions, particularly home care aides. Home care aides are either agency-based or non-agency-based. The non-agency-based home care aides will work directly for a private home, but many of the agencies are unionized, which means that they'll have better wages and working conditions. But amidst the pandemic, this is still very intimate work, having access to personal protective equipment is really critical and not always available. And I think Marissa can talk more because the National Domestic Workers Alliance did a survey of domestic workers during the pandemic who were able to give very insightful responses about their experiences and access to protective PPE during COVID.
Yes. So in the beginning of the pandemic, we understood it almost immediately that the fallout from the pandemic was going to be swift and severe. And as a result, it came across as a kind of like a trifecta of crises. One, which was economic. The second was a health crisis. The third was a result of racial violence in this country at the same time. We launched a survey at the beginning of the pandemic called Notes from the Storm. Workers surveyed each other and found that during the beginning of the pandemic, between like March and June, which we thought was going to be a end of a pandemic, and we're still here, there was a 62% of those who responded had lost their jobs or either had fewer hours and less pay. As the pandemic continued, we found that that percentage to increase greatly. And undocumented workers were more likely to be working fewer hours with even less pay. And we found that for workers who responded to our survey, many of them had no safety nets. So 43% of the respondents feared seeking assistance or resources from like federal, state, and local government due to like their immigration status. And then I guess, again, as the pandemic continued, that percentage increased even more. And then a staggering 75% of the respondents reported receiving no safety equipment, PPE, to be working in these closed, intimate settings, especially at a time when we were still trying to understand, like, how was this disease spreading? And 45% of the respondents had no medical insurance. And the biggest divide of that was between documented and undocumented workers. Those that were undocumented were a whopping 83%, having like no access to medical insurance. And then during this time period of survey, we found that 24% of our respondents had experienced living with someone who had COVID-19 symptoms or even higher risk. And we're considering doing a follow-up to the survey because we have found that that exposure to COVID-19, because they had to continue to work or because they lived in neighborhoods that were really like highly affected, that exposure and infection rate is much, much higher now. And what this means is when advocating for the safety of workers who by the state had been deemed essential, but at the same time were not provided with those essential safety nets, they were largely uncovered by unemployment insurance, didn't have full access at the state level to paid personal paid sick leave, were not being prioritized in like vaccine rollouts, were not being prioritized in terms of PPE, and we really had to struggle to fight to assess like what are safety guidelines for these essential domestic workers, both at a state and a local level, really like time and time again being relegated to just sort of the back of the line in terms of prioritizing both advocacy and care and the social safety and the safety nets that the government should have been providing this entire time.
Shamir, what is to be done? What are the recommendations in terms of accessing fair pay and labor protections and the rights that are needed to stay healthy and provide for their own families?
We are really supportive of the Biden plan that's just being shaped. But I think a critical first step to providing domestic workers with the same protections as other workers would be to take what we've done and what the National Domestic Workers Chapter here in New York has done, passing the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights for New York, but taking that just one step further on a national scale and creating a National Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. Protections that domestic workers have in this state could be definitely be expanded in the ways that Marissa mentioned moments ago, but that would be a critical first step that we are really excited about.
And how can people access the report?
You can access our report by going to our website, fiscalpolicy.org.
Really, we've got to get on the ball to make sure that those who care for us and our families are otherwise cared for economically, politically, socially, health-wise, and so on. And Marissa, why don't you give us a word on what is to be done?
Shamir did mention that there is a National Domestic Worker Bill of Rights, and what can be done is to both support that at a national level, but also to understand that New York has led the way. Like, we were the first state in the country to pass our Bill of Rights, but we need to take it further. Domestic workers still don't have protections and inclusion in both state-level human rights law and at the city level as well. So that means that domestic workers, looking at the demographics of who are domestic workers, are still subject to discrimination, both for gender, race, religion. And when we're thinking about, like, how do we correct our historical wrongs, this would be, you know, a very bold next step, is to make sure that all domestic workers are included in human rights protections. And then, you know, for us, as domestic workers in our organizing, we know who we are. So many out there do not know who we are. And so this report is really key for helping everyone else to understand who are domestic workers, who are they amongst the community and our society, all the different ways that need to advocate for strong and just policies that support domestic workers.
How can people find out more and involve themselves in the work of Domestic Workers United?
Follow our website at domesticworkers.org.
I've been speaking with Marissa Santino, co-director of the New York chapter of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and Shamir Settle, policy analyst at the Fiscal Policy Institute. They say it's time we consider how to make care work fair work. For equal rights and justice, I'm Mimi Rosenberg, saying educate, agitate, and organize to empower. We, the people, for another world is possible, and we are the ones to make it so.